Calendar. Handling hurtful behavior. Your daughter, Mei Ling, is at a birthday party with dozens of other little girls. About an hour into the party, she intentionally walks on the hand of a little girl who was playing quietly on the ground. The other child, Angela, howls in pain and distress. How do you handle this? Do you whisk your child out of the house, making your apologies to the hostess? Do you yell and make a big scene in front of all the partygoers? We recommend approaching it like this. Say, Mei Ling, come with me. Take the girl's hand and lead her someplace private that will serve as a think-it-over place. Mei Ling, I want you to sit here and breathe and think about what you did. I'll be right here. Motion to a spot within easy reach. When you're ready to use your words and tell me what you did wrong and how you could do it right, say, ready, and I'll come. After about 5 minutes, Mei Ling says, ready. Get down to your daughter's eye level. Take Mei Ling's hands in yours and look warmly into the girl's eyes. Okay, sweetheart, tell me what you did. Use your words. I stepped on Angela's hand. Continuing to hold her hands and look into her eyes, say, honey, people are not for hurting. Depending on the child's language processing capabilities, you might expand on the discussion, saying, honey, do you like it when other people hurt you? No? You feel sad and angry about that? How do you think Angela feels? This last part of the discussion may be too wordy, depending on the child's age and impairments, and can be skipped as appropriate. What can you say to Angela to help her feel better? I don't know. You can say, I'm sorry I hurt you. Let's hear you say that. By precisely identifying the action in question, called marking the task in child development literature, make it clear to your child exactly what is expected. I'm sorry I hurt you. Yes, very good. Good using your words. Now let's go say I'm sorry I hurt you to Angela. Lead your daughter back into the party and over to Angela. Sweetheart, what do you say to Angela to help fix her hurt? I'm sorry that I hurt you. Good saying you're sorry, Mei Ling. Now let's practice walking by Angela with respect and not hurting her. Practice walking together near the playing children one or more times. Afterward, say, Mei Ling, that was good walking by your friends with respect and not hurting them. You could give her a hug here. Now you can go play for another 15 minutes, and then we will go home. You might also suggest that your daughter do an act of kindness for the child she harmed. You want to handle this incident firmly and immediately, but also matter-of-factly and using words sparingly. You don't need to go into a tirade or shrieking fit, nor do you need to look the other way and pretend it didn't happen. Firmly and promptly interrupt the bad behavior, redirect your daughter toward a redo, and help her achieve success. Recapping to your child what she did to correct the situation and why it was good helps cement the right approach in her mind. Making amends with an act of kindness. After a child has injured another individual, perhaps by hurting them physically or stealing from them, consider going beyond the basic redo and immediate apology. You might suggest to the child that she take some time privately to put together a kind gesture or to prepare a gift for the injured party. For example, Mei Ling could draw Angela a picture or bake her a batch of cookies. Sometimes saying sorry is all that is necessary. But by having the child personally create and give a gift, she gets to demonstrate kindness and thoughtfulness. In this way, the child not only gets the message that, I won't hurt others, but also that, I will be kind and caring to others. Even when you're disciplining, you must remember to affirm a child's preciousness, not just the absence of badness. In all interactions, you want to help illustrate to your child how sweet, valuable, and intrinsically lovable she is. You want her to know you see the precious, real child beneath the bad behavior. Giving her a concrete opportunity to reinforce that message with a kind gesture helps her see it too. Intercept with words, not a tackle. Don't be a linebacker and physically dominate your child every time he gets out of line. It may be immediately rewarding to feel like you're in control, but this strategy doesn't develop his long-term skills or promote life values. Let's say you're working in the kitchen and your son grabs for the butter knife full of peanut butter. You could easily and instinctively just lift the plate and knife off the counter and out of reach, but fight that urge. Moving an object away only teaches the child to be faster the next time. Instead, intercept behavior with words. In a voice of authority, say, "Stop. Let me see those eyes. What do you need?" "I need a peanut butter sandwich." Then use your words and tell me that. The goal is for a child to interrupt his or her own misbehavior at the point of intention, instead of parents interrupting a misbehavior at the point of action. If you say "stop," and your son does in fact stop, that means he had to consciously and deliberately control his own action. That's a real accomplishment. If you just pull that knife or plate away, you've denied him the opportunity to physically encode the correct response. Pulling stuff out of the way turns the interaction into a game or an arms race. Instead, use words to communicate and help your child build desirable habits. The only time to physically intercept your child is if someone's physical safety is in immediate and serious danger. Chapter 7. Dealing with Defiance. An 8-year-old is shooting baskets in the yard after school when his mother calls out the back door, "Alexander, in 5 minutes it will be time to come inside and do homework." 4 minutes later, she announces, "One more minute before homework, son. Time to finish up out here." He grumbles and tosses the ball at the hoop. A minute later, she reminds him, "Alexander, it's time now to come inside and do homework." The boy shouts at her, "No, I won't do that. You're stupid and I hate you. I'm not coming in and you're not my boss." If you were his parent, how would you handle Alexander's reaction? This is a significant challenge that demands immediate response. You need to move closer to your child and assert your authority while giving the child a chance for a do-over. Take a deep breath. Plant your 2 feet slightly apart so that you can feel the ground solidly beneath you. Take another deep breath, lower your voice, and speak firmly. Feel your own strength and speak from that place of authority. Your child will hear the strength emanate from you as you say, "It is not okay to talk to me like that. You can always have your feelings, but you must always talk to me with respect. Try that again." You don't whine, plead, or threaten. You simply give a directive for a redo. At this point, your son might say, "I don't want to come in. I hate doing my homework." If he has trouble verbalizing this, ask leading questions such as, "Are you feeling angry or sad?" Reaffirm his right to express his feelings, but remind him that he must communicate with respect. Throughout this chapter, we'll consider how to deal with varying levels of defiance. Is that stubbornness or really impairment? Children with undiagnosed learning disorders can become combative and unreasonable when asked to do homework. This poor behavior is caused by frustration and fear and reflects the child's anxiety about his limited abilities. Unfortunately, many parents mistakenly assume that their child's reluctance to tackle homework is mere stubbornness. The truth is, a child can be skilled in one area, yet be ill-equipped to grasp another subject area. For example, your child might earn high grades in math, but struggle mightily with reading. Your child has not chosen this skill set. It's just the way nature made him. So it does no good to hammer him with comments like, "You're so smart. Why are you just being stubborn?" If you have a child who consistently seems combative about homework or a certain subject area, it's worth the investment to have a specialist do learning testing to rule out specialized learning differences or disorders. If you do discover problems, it will help you gain compassion for the child's challenges, and then you can arrange for special instruction. Match their response. There's no point in tackling a gnat with an elephant gun. That's why you should gauge your response based on the level of misbehavior you encounter. Use the least amount of firmness and corrective effort needed to resolve a situation. Address a mild challenge with playful engagement. Typically, the mildest challenge to parental authority is when a child is sassy, controlling, or uncooperative. In this case, assuming the child is not in any sort of physical distress, which you would have to address first, use a playful reminder to bring him or her back in line. Using a lighthearted tone of voice, ask a simple, good-natured question that reminds the child who is in charge. Then give the child a chance to self-correct. Consider, for example, how to respond if a child orders you, "Carry me to the car." First option. You can reply in a playful tone of voice. "Are you asking me or telling me?" The child responds. "I'm asking." You reply, "Well then, try it again. Mom, would you carry me to the car?" You answer, "Well, since you're asking me, I'd love to carry you. Would you like to ride piggyback or on my shoulders?" Second option. You can reply in a playful tone of voice. "Who is the boss here?" For the right answer, "Parents are," you'd reply, "That's right. Parents are the boss here." Third option. You can reply in a playful tone of voice. "Whoa, how about trying that again, this time with respect?" Then, when the child asks properly, you can praise her. "Good asking with respect. Since you're asking with respect, I'd love to carry you. Do you choose piggyback or on my shoulders?" If they get tougher, so do you. Sometimes a child refuses to self-correct when you use playful engagement. In this case, he may respond to your playful question with a degree of defiance, such as, "I'm telling you!" Then the ball is back in your court. Embody authority and get your child's attention. Before anything else, get yourself centered and grounded firmly on your 2 feet. Lower the tone of your voice and use the voice of authority. Make sustained but not threatening eye contact. State expectations and consequences. For example, you could respond simply with, "If you are telling me, the answer will always be no. Now, would you like to try asking me with respect?" Offer 2 acceptable alternatives. Another alternative is to go straight to offering 2 choices. You can say, "You have 2 choices. You may walk beside me or walk beside me and hold my hand. Which do you choose?" Once the child complies, praise him or her for doing the requested behavior. For example, "Good asking with respect," or "Good choosing." Then you go back about the day with a friendly interaction. Bringing out heavier artillery. If your child becomes utterly defiant after you've tried milder approaches, you've got to step up to the plate just as they did. For example, a heightened challenge would be a child who responds to your earlier corrections with, "You can't boss me around." Feel your conviction. Again, take a deep breath and remember not to take the misbehavior personally. Stand firmly on both feet in a posture that is solid and grounded. No slouching. Instead of feeling outmatched by this child, feel the full strength of who you are. Recognize the value of what you bring to this child for her safety and her instruction. Give one chance to self-correct. You can verify that you're really facing defiance by first giving your child the opportunity to self-correct. In a voice that is firm, clear, and no-nonsense, ask, "Do you want to try that again with respect?" If your child acknowledges the mistake at this level and redoes the action with respect, he or she has learned a valuable lesson in self-correction, and you can simply praise your child's behavior and resume ordinary activities. Lead the child to a think-it-over place. If the child won't budge from his challenge, direct him to a spot where he can sit quietly and reflect while you stay nearby. Remember, do not leave the child entirely alone. Say, "I'll be right here." Once you are ready to use your words and tell me what you did wrong and how you could do it right, you tell me. Then wait for however long it takes until the child says he is ready. Then listen quietly to what the child says. Coach the child to redo it correctly. After the child has explained what he did wrong, ask, "How could you have done that better or right?" Discuss this briefly and then guide the child to redo the behavior correctly. When the child has successfully completed a redo, praise the specific behavior he has just displayed.
Wahoo! Good asking with respect.
Take a deep breath, get centered, and feel the full strength of who you are. Recognize the value of what you bring to this child for his safety and guidance. Recognize your child's condition. Because harmed children can have a volatile neurochemistry and hair trigger fear responses, they may cycle in and out of distress and tantrums easily. Stay aware of your child's current physiological state, in other words, his or her meltdown potential. Observe your child's physical state for clues as to whether he is relatively calm, in which case you can safely touch your son and use playful approaches to correcting behavior, or whether he is on high alert and nearing the brink of a nuclear meltdown, in which case you would limit physical interaction and not challenge him any more than absolutely necessary to ensure his safety and the safety of others. In this more extreme case, your child is not in a learning mode, and it would be best to briefly attend to his hunger, fatigue, or fear before attempting any retraining. Example of enforcing consequences. Your 4-year-old has climbed up on a rickety picnic table at the park and is jumping up and down, trying to grab a tree branch overhead. She could get hurt, so you need to stop this immediately. Your first response would be to say in a firm voice, "Cindy, get down off the table." Then pause for a moment to see if she complies. If she continues jumping and is clearly in danger, approach her quickly before you take a deep breath. Plant your feet firmly on the ground and feel yourself balanced and grounded. Making your voice firmer, louder, and deeper, repeat yourself. Once. "Cindy, get down from the table." Again, mentally count a slow 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, while you wait for a response. If after doing this you still get no response, step in closer and seek eye contact and be sure you've got her attention. Depending how close you can get to the child, you could reach out your arm, palm up, to draw her attention to your eyes and say, "Cindy, look at me." Note that if your child is highly agitated or defiant already, be cautious about physical touch, because that could deepen her fight or flight response. If your daughter squirms and looks away, wait a beat and repeat yourself using the voice of authority. Once she has made eye contact, hold up 2 fingers. You have 2 choices. Hold up 1 finger, palm toward your child. You can come down yourself now. Hold up 2 fingers. Or I'll carry you down. What do you choose? Internally, count about 5 seconds to give your child a chance to self-regulate on her own. If she doesn't, in a little deeper voice, say, "Which do you choose? If you can't make the decision now, I'm going to make it for you." A variety of scenarios may unfold. Capitulation. One outcome is your child capitulates and you say in an affirming yet authoritative voice, "That's a good choice. Good choosing." Now let's go back to playing on the swings. Indecision and whining. Your child chooses to be carried, but then whines, "No, no, I'll do it myself." Don't allow her to change her mind after the fact. Simply follow through on her original choice. She has to know that you meant what you said earlier. You're not threatening or bribing. You simply expressed your intent. Your word is your promise, and you're sticking to it. Stonewalling. If your child continues to be unresponsive and stone-faced but remains in physical danger, you can pick her up and carry her down. If your child is in self-protective mode and you pick her up, she's liable to get volatile. Pick her up and put her on the ground with the knowledge that she might become physically aggressive. In that event, you need to be prepared to wrap firm, safe arms around her until she calms down and quits trying to harm you or herself. When your child is stuck. Sometimes your child might seem to get stuck in misbehavior, continuing to resist parental authority. At those times, it's helpful to observe and stay attuned to whether your child shows physical signs of distress, such as a flushed face, pupil dilation or constriction, clenched muscles, darkening bags under the eyes, or facial grimaces. If you see any of those, ask yourself whether your child is having a fear reaction. Your child has unmet physiological needs, for food, water, rest, etc. Your request of your child, honestly, is unreasonable. It's okay to take a nurturing detour. If your child is having a fear reaction, do your best to disengage the child from the situation. For more advice on overcoming fear, revisit Chapter 4. There are times when a child is simply too hungry, too tired, or too frazzled to pull herself together quickly. It's okay to briefly ignore her challenge to authority and take a quick detour for nurturing. For example, you could say, "Come to the kitchen with me. I want you to take a few minutes to rest and have a cool drink and a snack, and then I want to talk to you about this." On rare occasions, parents get so frazzled that they aren't thinking as clearly as they'd like and make unreasonable requests. Here's an extreme example of an unreasonable request we once witnessed. During an overnight visit to the market on Christmas Eve, we watched a mother punish her child for crying in the shopping cart at 2 a.m. That child was overtired and needed to be home in bed. It wasn't fair to expect him to behave like a model citizen under those trying circumstances. Once you're satisfied that your child is no longer in physical distress and that your request is reasonable, firmly and sensitively continue with your discipline follow-through. Be flexible with compromises. You don't have to be rigid about enforcing two choices, as long as the child continues to see you as the authority. Sometimes you might have to delay giving choices to bring the child's blood sugar and fatigue in line. When you do give two choices, it's okay to set them aside for an equally acceptable choice that suits your needs. For example, perhaps your son, who is physically exhausted following his return from the playground, defies reason by pronouncing, "I want to play football," before anything else, see to his physical needs. You could say, "Sweetheart, you just finished playing football 10 minutes ago. Let's go to the kitchen and get a snack so you can catch your breath. Then we can talk about your choices." Once the boy has had something to drink and eat, he will be in a more receptive state for choices. You say, "Now that you've had a snack, you can work on your homework or practice piano." "But I don't want to do homework or practice piano," he insists. "Do you want to ask me for a compromise?" "Yeah. Can I watch television?" "Yes, you may watch for 30 minutes, and then you need to do your homework." Once a parent shows willingness to compromise, the child generally reciprocates without a struggle. Again, it is important to talk through his part of the compromise. "When my 30 minutes is up, I'll turn off the TV and do my homework with no fussing." Dealing flexibly with the unexpected. Often, a child's defiance and misbehavior are driven by sheer instinct, triggered by a deep fear or survival need. That is true for Vladimir in the following example. The little boy approaches the park with his mother. She holds his hand as they head toward the swings. "Stay with me, sweetheart," she says. A half-dozen playing kids are shrieking with laughter and delight around the playground. Parents sit and talk on a bench. Behind a clump of trees, an enormous bulldozer is digging up an area of the park grounds. The machine belches black smoke and groans into action. Vladimir breaks free from his mother and starts racing as fast as his little legs can take him in the other direction. "Vladimir!" cries his mother. "Stop! Come back here!" But the little boy is already rounding the corner and out of sight. Whenever he becomes fearful, Vladimir can't help running as fast as his little legs will take him to escape. This boy has a good reason for wanting to escape. Before he even learned to speak, Vladimir witnessed a younger sister being fatally injured. Although barely a toddler at the time, the experience left Vladimir with a hair-trigger fear response, which in this case was set off by the big, noisy construction equipment at the park. Vladimir's running is a flight reaction to terror and a type of self-medication because repetitive physical activity brings down the stress hormone cortisol and drives up the feel-good neurotransmitters, including serotonin. Vladimir's mother understands his underlying urge for self-protection, so she compassionately redirects her son toward a safer, more adaptive use of his running impulse. She brings his behavior in line while also providing felt safety by later telling him, "Honey, you cannot run away. You could get hurt when you run away like that, and I couldn't catch up with you." Instead of punishing him or forbidding him to run, she prescribes the behavior by saying, "Let's make a deal. I know sometimes you are afraid and want to run. I'm afraid you're going to get hurt by a car that might hit you, so when you need to run, you tell me, and we'll run together, okay?" The boy nods and his mom hugs him. "Great," she says. "I care about you and want you to be safe." The next time Vladimir gets the urge to run, he tells his mom, who leads him to a big grassy field where they run together in big circles. When his mom tires and can't keep up anymore, she stands and watches nearby. At each lap, she calls out encouragements like, "Woohoo! Good running, Vladimir!" You won't need to run with your fearful child for the next 20 years. Running together is just a stepping-off place to teach more appropriate, proactive strategies, such as deep breathing, using words to express, "I'm afraid," and so on. Vladimir's mother knows she doesn't need to be confrontational to deal with her son's inappropriate behavior. Instead, she's co-opted it in a controlled way with a positive goal in mind. By offering to run along with him, she shows her son that he isn't alone in his terror. She will be there to help protect him. She makes it safe for him to talk about his fear and his needs, thus increasing his felt safety. By cheering him on, she is reinforcing his cooperation and giving the message that she is emotionally present with him. And, obviously, Vladimir will be safer running in a designated field and not dashing wildly through the streets where he might get hurt. By entering Vladimir's world and operating according to its rules, this mother is paving the path for her son to ultimately come into her world. She introduces him to a new safety route, one that involves using his words, so that he will have less need for physical escape to feel safe. This mother's parental authority has not been undermined by compromising this way. On the contrary, she has reinforced her authority as his caretaker by helping Vladimir feel protected and showing him how to safely rechannel his instinctive reactions. The goal is not to create a Stepford child who complies, robot-like, to every instruction. Our goal as parents is to teach our child to thrive in society. Respecting authority is just one skill a child needs in order to blossom into a fully dimensional individual, an individual who can identify his own feelings, get his needs met appropriately, understand consequences, and navigate the world successfully. You, the parent, need to direct the show, but you can do it with compassion and creativity. Dealing with an out-of-control child. Anytime a child is out of control, get there as quickly as possible to assess his or her needs. The general strategy should be to interrupt the behavior, get your child's full attention, get him to express his needs appropriately, redirect behavior, and find an appropriate way to meet his needs. This sounds straightforward, but it requires flexibility and sensitivity to each individual situation. Consider this example. At the mall, 6-year-old Joey darts away from you, runs up to an unknown little boy with a soda, and grabs the drink for himself. The other little boy grabs back, and in short order, both boys are screaming. How can you respond effectively in this situation? First, catch up to your child pronto, and recall that your child may have had a problem with thirst, hunger, or fighting for food in his formative years. Quickly decide whether the child is still calm enough that you can interrupt the behavior with words. If so, immediately say, "Whoa there! That's not yours, Joey!" Give that back to him. Then wait and watch while your son returns, grudgingly perhaps, the drink to the stranger. But if he is too distressed and still screaming, you don't want to provoke him into throwing the drink. You may have to physically separate the boys and hand back the drink. Now get down to the child's eye level and speak his name, Joey. Pause for a beat, then lower your voice and repeat the child's name. Then request, "Let me see your eyes." Initiate gentle but firm physical contact with a single hand to make a connection and help the boy focus on you. You could lay one hand lightly on his hand or touch two fingertips to his chin. Once you get his attention, help him calm down with a phrase such as "stop and breathe." After allowing him a moment to collect himself, continue with, "Use your words. Tell me what you need." Your son might say, "I want something to drink." Ask, "Is that one yours?" No. No, it's not yours. Give it back to the little boy and we can go get you a different drink. If your son continues to rebel, respond with, "It is not okay to take other people's things." You have two choices. You can give it back, or I'll give it back. Be direct and stick to your point. Repeat the choices if necessary, adding, "You need to choose, or I'll choose for you." If you've made good progress, say, "Tell him you're sorry you took it and that you'll see him another day." "I'm sorry." Follow up with, "Now use your words and tell me what you need." "I'm thirsty. Can I have a drink?" Good using your words to tell me what you need. Let's go get a drink for you right now. With this approach, you give the child hope and demonstrate to him that together you're going to resolve this problem as quickly as possible. You also made it clear that screaming and grabbing are not necessary to get his needs met. In this type of situation, the child felt he had to go out on his own to get his needs met. Once he learns that he can simply ask for what he needs and learns that you are trustworthy and willing to help him, this type of behavior will increasingly extinguish itself. The investment model of parenting. In the beginning, when you're beginning to reshape behavior, it's wise not to put yourself in public settings where you can't take care of parenting business. You will need to be able to work with your child however long it takes to get a misbehavior satisfactorily corrected. If you do find yourself out in public, you have to be prepared to drop whatever you're doing immediately and tend to defiance or behavioral retraining needs. When you utter words to a child, you are bound to enforce those words. If you do go out in public with the child, accept that there may be times when you have to leave a full grocery cart in the grocery store. It will be a bother, but the child needs to learn that he or she does not have you over a barrel and can't control you with public tantrums. This is an investment model of parenting. The foundation you establish while the child is young will reap rewards as he or she matures. Consistent training is an important investment in your child's future. It's high investment, high yield parenting. If you fail to pay now, you'll pay later, and the interest is steep. The sooner you get them started on the right path, the better the overall outcome. Children from hard backgrounds will come to appreciate your deep commitment to their growth. These are resilient kids, but they will not self-correct, and they need the help of a grounded and encouraging adult. Since working with Dr. Purvis, I realized how important it is to be consistent and firm. That when I say no, it means no. I felt so bad for what Curtis had been through that I wasn't enforcing at home. Guardian of a formerly abused child. Finding the right balance. There are two problems we encounter in families who are having difficulty disciplining a child. Either the parents are too strict and controlling, or they're too permissive and lenient. Both approaches are ineffective. If you're too strict or authoritarian, you become overly controlling and squelch a child's individuality. This limits your child to such a narrow path that she doesn't get the opportunity to grow. Over time, her resentment festers. She remains alienated, guarded, and angry. On such a tightrope, she never has the opportunity to practice making decisions. As a result, she'll struggle with impulsiveness and look for opportunities to rebel all of her life. On the other hand, if you avoid confrontation at all costs and can't bear to put your foot down, your child will run wild. She won't learn the social skills necessary to function effectively in school or out in the world. She won't be able to cope with any of life's little frustrations, and without boundaries, she won't trust that you are strong enough to protect and guide her. Impulsiveness will guide her, and throughout her life she'll be unequipped to make smart choices. Finding the right balance between strictness and permissiveness is vital. How can you tell if you're striking the right balance? Here's a self-test. You're too permissive and lenient if you make rules and promises and then don't enforce them. You nag, 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 but don't enforce. You wait too long to enforce and then explode in anger. You beg your child to cooperate. Your child is the one who decides if and when things get done. You ask your child, "What do you want?" more often than you tell him what has to happen. You allow your child to physically harm you or others. You often pretend you don't notice misbehavior or disrespect. Your child encounters no negative consequences for cursing or bad-mouthing you. Your child doesn't take your words seriously. Your child talks disrespectfully to you. You're too strict and controlling if you tell your child no more frequently than you praise him. You tell your child no more frequently than you show him affection. You constantly tell your child what to do and don't give him the opportunity to make choices or compromise. You shut down your child's expressions of sadness or disappointment. You ignore or belittle your child's point of view. You use punishments, shaming, and insults to gain your child's compliance. An hour doesn't go by without you finding fault with your child. You're achieving the right balance if once you make a rule or promise, you enforce it. You use the minimum firepower necessary to correct misbehavior. Whenever possible, you use kindness and playfulness to make your point. You use praising and positive statements with your child 5 times more often than you use corrective statements. You catch your child doing things right. Several times a day, you say how precious and dear your child is to you. You let your child decide between choices. You compromise with your child. You accept and respect your child's expressions of sadness or disappointment. Your child recognizes that you are the boss and have the final say, but he isn't scared of you. Here's another way to figure out whether you're striking the right balance. Which do you enjoy more? When the child obeys you and does what you say, or when your child succeeds and accomplishes a task well? What is the real payoff for you? If you're after complete control, you'll have a child who capitulates when you're present, but doesn't function well in other situations. If you prefer control over the warmth and interaction of a shared, but messy relationship, your child can't get the practice he needs to internalize values and develop inner mastery. Put the emphasis on connecting. Even though you sometimes need to correct a child, you want his or her overall experience to be positive. That's why, for each corrective comment you make, such as, "Stop that right now," "It's time to put away your toys now," "People are not for hurting," "Please lower your voice," you make 5 connecting comments, such as, "You can do it," "You are such a precious child," "Thank you for letting me see your beautiful eyes," "You did a good job of listening," "Good job of sharing with your brother," "I'm so happy to spend time with you." Your goal is to empower your child to succeed in life, whether or not you're in the room with him. By fairly and consistently enforcing limits and by allowing self-determination appropriate to your child's developmental level and capacity, you can strike the right balance for optimal healing. One final note. Any time that you must put more limits and structure in place for a child, increase the affection and nurturing you offer him. By maintaining a good balance of structure and nurture, connection and correction, the child's spirit will remain trusting and open to your guidance. The rules of connected families. A child may not dominate the family through tantrums, aggression, backtalk, whining, or any other tactic. Parents are kind, fair, and consistent. They stay calm and in control. They administer structure and limits, but they also provide a great deal of nurturing, praise, and affection. A child is encouraged to use words to express his or her needs directly and respectfully. Parents honor a child's boundaries and respectfully listen to his or her needs and requests. They never shame or ridicule a child's perspective. Parents meet all reasonable needs and requests. They say yes whenever they can. Occasionally, they allow a compromise, and at times they say no and deny requests. Parents respond to misbehavior immediately. They redirect the child to better choices, let him or her practice getting it right, and then praise the child for improvement. Once the conflict is resolved, they return to playful and warm interactions with their child. Chapter 8. Nurturing at Every Opportunity. 5-year-old Tim loved the dessert his mother served one evening. The next morning, his mom discovered a stash of the tasty treat, along with a glass of milk, sitting on the boy's windowsill. After she retrieved the food, she spoke gently to her son. Sweetie, it's not okay for you to sneak food. This food will attract bugs in the bedroom. Let's put it back in the kitchen. Here, will you help me bring it back to the kitchen?
Okay, says Tim, carrying the dessert.
Back in the kitchen, his mom said, Tim, honey, I know you were hungry many times before you came home to Daddy and me, but I promise you'll always have enough food to eat here. Later, when we go to the grocery store, we will choose some snacks and drinks for you to keep in your room.
Oh, yeah, agreed Tim enthusiastically.
Together, they'll assemble a basket of packaged snacks and bottled water that her son can keep in his room for when he wakes hungry or thirsty in the middle of the night. This will go a long way toward his feeling of safety at home. Equal parts of affection and discipline are vital to a child's healing. Without gentleness, kindness, and warmth, a child's development and mental health are compromised. Nurturing is vital to every child's well-being, and especially so to an at-risk child whose self-image and emotional equilibrium are already fragile. Adopted children, like Tim, who have histories of deprivation or harm, are extremely vulnerable and ill-equipped to tough it out. Fortunately, we can find plenty of opportunities throughout the day to nurture a child both physically and emotionally. One way to nurture at-risk children is by responding respectfully to their foibles, even while we persistently correct those behaviors. In the example earlier, Tim's mom wisely refrained from punishing the food hoarding. She recalls her son's origins and is mindful that this type of behavior is driven by a deeply entrenched survival instinct. The loving atmosphere and problem-solving suggestions she offers are conducive to building closeness, trust, and attachment, all vital to a healing relationship. When a parent feels frustrated or helpless in dealing with a child, it can become too easy to focus on discipline and forget about nurturing. Yet it's precisely at those times when we need to let compassion be our guide. At risk, adopted kids tend to absorb the message that they are unwelcome in this world. They easily feel unimportant, unworthy, and rejected. One of your most critical jobs is to counteract your child's negative self-perception by continually showing how much you value your child. Throughout the day, you always want to remind your child how very important he or she is to you and that you see your child's unique beauty and goodness shining through. Even when you need to be firm and enforce rules, you can still be the encouraging voice that whispers in your child's ear, reminding him how much you believe in and love him. Vulnerable, my foot. Were you skeptical when we described these children as vulnerable? It can be hard to believe that your street-smart and manipulative son or daughter is genuinely fragile. But look closer. From a developmental standpoint, for example, it's not uncommon to find within a single harmed youngster the trust and bonding needs of an infant, the independence needs of a 2-year-old, the shame issues of a 3-year-old, the concrete thinking of a 4-year-old, the reasoning skills of a 5-year-old, the street smarts of a 16-year-old, all wrapped in the body of an 8-year-old. Yes, such children may be a challenging handful, but they are also profoundly needy and fragile and deserve our compassion and care. The importance of self-esteem. Harmed and adopted children will often come to you with entrenched negative self-images and feelings of failure. Poor self-esteem is linked to a variety of behavioral and health problems, as well as to an increased risk for drug and alcohol abuse in adolescence. The more effective, successful, and valued a child feels, the greater his or her self-esteem. A healthy self-image is an important element of good mental health. Self-esteem grows in part from a child's feeling of mastery and efficacy from successfully accomplishing a goal. That's why it's important to give your children realistic goals that may stretch them a little, but are ones that they can reach. You need to act as a cheerleader and a coach, offering a child support and freedom to take a risk and succeed. Even the amount of time you're willing to spend, or not spend, on your child, playing, guiding, listening, talking, laughing, and disciplining him or her
sends a subtle message about how much you truly value your child. Playful engagement, the power of fun. What child can resist fun? None that we know. Play is a safe route to the heart of a harmed child and a powerful vehicle for healing. When parents play non-judgmentally with their children, they're speaking the universal language of fearless interaction. The Let Your Child Lead exercise is designed specifically to build attachment through shared play, to reinforce a child's feeling of value, and to rekindle a parent's joy in parenting. You'll notice that many of the nurturing techniques outlined in this chapter incorporate games and play. Play allows you to safely touch the heart of a vulnerable child. Shared silliness, laughter, and games all demonstrate to a child that you mean no harm. That's why we encourage you to engage your child playfully throughout the day. Use a lighthearted attitude and tone of voice and interject gentle games and jokes whenever possible. With playful engagement, your interaction becomes positive and delightful, and the pathway gets cleared for trust and learning. Just as a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, playful interaction helps you reshape behavior while building enjoyable relationships. There are thousands of opportunities throughout each day to engage your child in cute, fun things. You might ask, do you want to press the button for the elevator? Or, do you want this color bubblegum? Here are more examples of playful interaction you can incorporate into your day. Make it a game to walk in sync, matching the length of your strides. Sing a made-up song to accompany play in the bathtub. Count together and clap. 1, 2, 3, 4. In rhythm to an activity your child is doing. In some games, you can be the leader. In other games, let your child take the lead within the guidelines you set. The possibilities are varied and limited only by your imagination. Whenever possible, make the activity interactive and demonstrate your appreciation of the child's contributions. Let your child lead, a nurturing exercise. Here is a joyful, nurturing, and fun exercise for families. Set a timer for 15 minutes. During this period, turn off your phones. Take no phone calls. Do no dishes, cleaning, or other chores. Focus your full, undivided attention on your child. Let yourself be directed in play by your child. Allow the youngster to lead you in whatever game or play activity he or she chooses. While you participate, practice being affectionate and warm. Make many positive comments and offer praise and soft eye contact in a way that shows the child how much you value him or her. Become attuned to your child's guidance and delight. Let your child lead the activity and subtly match his or her physical motions and speech patterns. For example, if your child sits on the floor and plays with his right hand, you do the same. Relax and enjoy the moment, following the flow of whatever play satisfies the soul of your child. Playfulness even helps discipline. Playful interaction can also be used as the first level of discipline. For example, if a child says something clearly inappropriate to you, respond in a lighthearted voice. Whoa! I cannot believe what my ears are hearing. Try that again, this time with respect. Or if a child growls, rather than confronting the inappropriate behavior head-on, you can ask playfully, are you a lion? Once a child starts giggling and smiling, you begin to get compliance and trust. When you praise a child for his or her efforts, no matter how modest those efforts might seem to you as an accomplished adult, your child's face will glow with delight. Confidence will grow, and he or she will be eager to try again. It's important to arrange your daily schedule so you're not just dragging children to and fro all day without any time to engage in playful teaching and guidance. If you don't have time to guide and teach your child in the course of the day, you're doing too much. Slow down and take each opportunity to interact playfully. A note about therapeutic play. Not all models of professional therapeutic play are identical. Some therapies take a passive, unstructured approach, and these are not effective for at-risk children with a history of neglect or orphanage rearing. A more structured environment, such as that found in TheraPlay, is appropriate. See Chapter 5 for more information. TheraPlay features guided, interactive games that create a safe environment for traumatized children. Their activities reinforce life values that empower positive behavioral change. TheraPlay exercises are explicitly designed to build attachment through mutual nurturing and errorless learning. Our approach in working with harmed children is very much aligned with the TheraPlay Institute approach, and we recommend their principles and resources. TheraPlay.org. Connecting through eye contact and matching. If your child has a history of harm, sensory processing issues, or an intense fear response, sustained eye contact may be more than he or she can accept in the beginning. Work to earn her trust over time, and eventually you and your child will be able to share warm, gentle, and emotionally connected eye contact. One way to start is by sitting side by side with your son and matching his gestures and play from a parallel position. When he begins to look at you and talk with you, you can scoot around to the front to play with him and make light eye contact. Wait to receive tacit acceptance before you move to face-to-face matching. Giving eye contact conveys how much